Last year, we had our very first ever baseball cards meeting, and we invited Keith Olbermann, who is our speaker. And this year, we decided we would get somebody maybe a little more prominent. So we reached out to Tom Schieber. Tom is the senior curator at the Baseball Hall of Fame. I urge you all to go visit the Hall of Fame as often as you'd like and can. And obviously, if you didn't know this already, the Baseball Hall of Fame, I think, probably has more baseball cards than any of you, 140,000 or something baseball cards. And so obviously, in Tom's role there, he's interacted and overlapped with a lot of the things we're interested in. And Tom is researches everything. He's one of my favorite researchers to read. So if you should seek out his blog that he writes on whenever he feels like it, which is my favorite kind of blog, right? He writes a lot about movies and baseball and how they interact, and which is a subject I love as well. So definitely support what Tom does at the Hall of Fame and also on his own writing and research. He is, if you go to the banquet tomorrow, he's being given the Chadwick Award for his contributions to baseball research, which is well deserved. And he is kind enough to speak with us today, so let's welcome him.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Those are very kind words. My dad always said when giving a presentation, never start off with an apology. So I'd like to apologize to my dad. This is a work in progress, so I'm dabbling in things, and bear with me on that. But I think it's great that the card committee started a year and a half ago. They're doing great work with the blog and the tweets and all of this, and they're touching on lots of neat subjects, and I really think that they've just scratched the surface of the possibilities of the baseball card world. One of the ones that's interesting me is that I'm not sure has really been delved in particularly deeply anywhere, let alone in the committee, is just the phenomenon of baseball card collecting itself. So I thought I'd relate some of the research that I've been doing regarding the baseball card collecting craze that took place at the end of the first decade of the 20th century. I've done a lot of research in the 19th century as well, and basically baseball card collecting as a craze, as a phenomenon, started basically as soon as they created a set of baseball cards, because if it hadn't have been a craze, they would have stopped doing that as a gimmick. So it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. But what I found interesting, it always bugged me, was why did all the tobacco cards stop in the mid-1890s for quite a while and not resurface again until the end of the first decade of the 20th century? And the answer is that the Dingley Act of 1897, which is a massive tariff bill, went into effect under the McKinley administration. It included a provision that basically made it illegal for companies to give away coupons, including things like baseball cards, in packages of tobacco. And I want to read to you the exact legalese that Congress, and only Congress can do. None of the packages of smoking tobacco and fine-cut chewing tobacco and cigarettes prescribed by law shall be permitted to have packed in or attached to or connected with them any article or thing whatsoever other than the manufacturer's wrappers and labels, the Internal Revenue stamp, and the tobacco or cigarettes respectively put upon therein, on which taxes are required to be paid under the Internal Revenue laws, nor shall they be affixed to or branded, stamped, marked, written, or printed upon said packages or their contents any promise or offer of or any order or certificate for any gift, prize, premium, payment, or reward. Period. That was the first period that they included in there. So why would they do this? Well, the answer was that the American Tobacco Company was a monopoly, and you know, eventually in the 20th century that was broken up. But they wanted to try and even the playing field for these independent tobacco companies, and they thought what was happening was the American Tobacco Company was putting in these coupons that if you redeemed after you get so many cards or whatever the case may be, you get a free set of cards, or you get a free poster or whatever. Or actually, sometimes it was more robust than that. And this is something that a very large conglomerate can pull off that small companies that are barely able to even just package their cigarettes and turn a profit are not able to pull off. So they felt that that was an unfair practice, and this is the way they were going to quash it. Eventually, like I said, the way they quashed it was they decided it was a monopoly, and they broke American Tobacco Company into the various tobacco companies later in the 20th century. But this effectively halted the introduction of baseball cards the inclusion of baseball cards in tobacco products until the Payne-Aldrich Tariff Act of 1909, which usurped the prior Tariff Act, and that basically removed the ban. And no coincidence, immediately there was the boom of tobacco baseball cards starting in 1909 and 10 and 11 with the what we now call the T202, 3, 4, 5, 6, all those tobacco cards. And they returned and they became very popular, and they returned with a vengeance. So as one might expect, that's a very beloved set by collectors, but even at the time, it was really sought after. There were a lot of people collecting those cards. It was just very popular. But also popular was the press expressing great concern that baseball card collecting was dangerous. Dangerous to children, dangerous to business owners, and dangerous to society in general. And I found many dozens, many scores of newspaper articles around that time, really mostly in 1909, 1910, that talk about the dangers of baseball card collecting. And it basically breaks down into six main categories, which I thought I would tell you about, mostly by quoting from contemporary sources at the time. So I'm going to be doing some reading of newspaper articles that came out at the time. So I guess I'll just press this button. So first of all, the first subject is that baseball card collecting created a nuisance. This is from the Washington, D.C. Evening Star of June 30, 1912. For the past year or so, several of the firms that manufacture cigarettes have been putting pictures of baseball players in the boxes of the brands of cigarettes they put out. These pictures have become very popular with a small boy, and it's been the experience of all cigarette smokers to be waylaid by a youngster on every corner and greeted with a never-ending request for baseball players. And this from the Greenville, South Carolina News of March 15, 1910. The small boy has not had what's coming to him yet in the way of baseball pictures from cigarette packages. Got any ball players, mister? Has come to be an interrogation from which there is no escape for the man who goes along the street with a cigarette in his mouth. Hans Wagner, Ty Cobb, Johnny Evers, Christy Matheson, Bugs Raymond, Eddie Collins, and an innumerable host of constellations of baseball horizon are all known to the youthful generation by that acquaintance which comes about through a possession of a picture. So here, what I think wonderful about this is that Bugs Raymond, really? Yeah, that's kind of an interesting, I think that's the only time he's been in the breath of those other players. But here we are, baseball cards are already being collected by kids and also doing an interesting job that I think all happened to us, which is we learned a lot about baseball through them. So these kids are learning about these ball players through the cards. Second, baseball card collecting promoted the illegal purchase of cigarettes by minors. Lexington, North Carolina Dispatch, September 29, 1909. Abram Rockwell, who conducts a fruit stand and confectionery on South Lafayette Street, was hailed before Mayor Jennings Wednesday, charged with fracturing the state law by selling cigarettes to minors. There were some 12 or 15 youngsters ranging in age from 8 to 15 who appeared suspiciously anxious to testify against the defendant, who is a foreigner, but lately a resident of Shelby. The mayor only examined three boys, and of this number, but one confessed to purchase for the purpose of smoking. The craze for baseball players' pictures seemed largely responsible for the purchases of the cigarettes by the kids. Third, as a consequence of purchasing tobacco, children were enticed to become smokers. The papers are criticizing the American Tobacco Company for taking advantage of the interest boys take in baseball to increase the sale of cigarettes. The Charlotte Chronicle recently had a vigorous article along that line. When the trust first began its big sales of cigarettes, it appealed to one element of the population by getting the nude or near-nude picture of a woman, sometimes an actress, in with every package of cigarettes. That made them popular with the lower type of sports or hangers-on at pool rooms and barbershops and saloons. Today, the trust is turning its attention to trying to catch the little boys by putting the picture of some noted baseball player in each package. Is any concern selling these coffin tacks warranted in making the tempting bait to the children? Commenting on this evil, the Statesville Landmark says, pictures, prizes, coupons, and the like are put into packages of cigarettes to induce the small boy and the lightheaded youth, who's old enough to know better, to buy. The pictures themselves may not only, the pictures themselves may not only do harm, as pointed out by the Chronicle, but they induce boys to buy cigarettes who might not otherwise buy them, and thus become cigarette smokers. The photos of actresses in cigarette packages, most of them showing a woman in a semi-nude form, were not the proper thing for small boys to have, and while the pictures of the baseball guys are harmless of themselves, they're responsible for a craze which has many evils in its train. The inducement to learn to smoke cigarettes is the worst of these evils. And the Raleigh, North Carolina Times of August 25, 1909 said, "The advertising man who conceived the idea of putting baseball pictures in cigarette packages did a good thing for his employers, but a mighty bad thing for the small boy. There ought to be some way to prohibit this kind of thing. It will do more to start young boys to smoking cigarettes than any other agency of which we can conceive." Fourth, it promoted gambling. Wilmington, Delaware, and Morning News, July 21, 1909. Wilmington boys have learned a new gambling game, and every day they can be seen almost any place in the city playing it with the earnestness of old crapshooters. There are pictures of baseball players given with a certain brand of cigarettes, and the small boy of today collects them with the same eagerness that his father, 20 years ago, collected the pictures of women and flags and ships and other things which came under the general title of cigarette pictures. Inquiry of two diminutive colored boys and a white boy who were industriously shooting picture cards last evening at 11th and Orange Streets revealed that the game was played by the challenger tossing his card in the air and then the challenged one tossing his card in turn. If the latter turned face or back up, matching the one first shot, the latter won. If not, he lost, and the winner added the other fellow's card to his stock of the bestest players in the league. They're playing it all day, everywhere, win or lose. So here we have over 110 years ago, and quite frankly, I found the reference to playing flip with cards that are essentially the same rules that at least when I was a kid playing, I don't know if kids are doing it now, essentially unchanged. That was 110 years ago, but if you go to the late 1880s, it's 130 years ago. Fort Mill, South Carolina Times, October 21, 1909. A number of papers have noticed how the little boys have taken to the pictures of famous baseball players found in cigarette boxes, how the little fellows flip the pictures to see whether face or back will turn up, how they win or lose their cards in this way. Some ace breakers in the distance for these little fellows who flip the pictures, and some seem to think something ought to be done to stop it. This craze is as much in evidence here as anywhere under the sun. You may ask any urchin you meet how many cigarette pictures he has, and you'll promptly get an answer of anywhere from 5 to 500. They flip the pictures here, too, just as elsewhere. There's where the fun comes in. They block the sidewalks and fill up the corners, flipping the little cards. They win and lose just as older people do at games of chance. It is the element of chance that invites these youngsters to this game of flip, but this is not the sole reason they're interested in these little pictures. There's a reward of $10 for a complete set of pictures, and this helps as an incentive to collect the pictures. Fifth, baseball card collecting brought about physical injuries. The Washington Post, May 8, 1910. Eager to obtain pictures of baseball players from several cavalrymen who were riding down King Street late yesterday afternoon, Marshall Briscoe, 12-year-old son of Castino Briscoe, who's employed in the office of the city engineer, frightened one of the horses and was knocked down and injured. The boy was carried unconscious into the office of Dr. Lee Wilkins, where it was found that he had been badly cut about the mouth and on one arm, and several of his teeth had been loosened. After the boy had his wounds dressed, he was taken to his home. The cavalrymen stayed by the boy until everything possible for his comfort had been done. And sixth, thanks to baseball card collecting, children became criminals. Los Angeles Times, August 10, 1911. So eager were four young boys yesterday to secure pictures of baseball players that they stole seven boxes of cigarettes in which the pictures were enclosed. They were arrested and taken to the detention home. Or the Winston-Salem, North Carolina Twin City Daily Sentinel, August 6, 1909. The most peculiar burglary ever committed in this city was brought to light this morning when Thompson's drugstore was opened up. The articles taken showed as plainly as possible that the offenders were boys. The supposition is that the boys crept into the building last night and hid, and that they were locked up, for there's no place that shows where or how they could have effected an entrance otherwise. They went out of the back door, which is fastened by a large iron bar. The boy, or boys, as it may have been, went to the cigar case and took out a carton of cigarettes and tore all of the packages open and took the coupons and pictures of baseball players and then piled the boxes back in the carton and left them undisturbed. This is the result of the keen interest manifested by the younger generation in collecting the ball players. The embryo fans all over the city have a mania for this form of amusement. Every time a pedestrian walks along the street, he's asked several times if he has any ball players. Everywhere also, they can be seen trading the pictures for different kinds as people once were accustomed to swap tobacco tags. The habit of collecting objects of this kind engenders the love of saving and is a good thing, but the Twin City has a fan or two who have allowed their enthusiasm to outweigh their honesty. After loading themselves with coupons and baseball players, the fans went behind the fountain, where they served themselves with refreshments consisting of ice cream and other things, and they made a small hole in the contents of the freezer. They also secured quite a number of other articles of different kinds, but everything that they took showed that the theft was the work of small boys. They finished the game by taking some chewing gum, which I think is ironic, and then retired through the back door. And finally, I jumped ahead here. The Wilson, North Carolina Daily Times, August 23, 1910. Richard McIntyre, a Negro about 16 years of age, was arrested here yesterday upon a warrant from Laurinburg, charging him with the murder of Barney Hill, a boy about the same age, the crime having occurred about 8 months ago. McIntyre is said to have been in Wilmington since that time. The boys were gambling with baseball pictures out of cigarette packages, tossing them for heads and tails, and got into a dispute. McIntyre hit Hall in the head with a ginger ale bottle, knocking him unconscious, and he died about a week later. Sheriff McLaurin has been notified, and the Negro will probably be carried to Laurinburg in the morning. So, baseball card collecting can lead to murder. In doing the research, I found it interesting that basically all these complaints for 1909, 1910, 1911 seem to have died down after that, even though baseball card production didn't die. But the mania for calling baseball collecting an evil really did die down within a couple of years of the reintroduction of baseball cards. Additionally, the majority of the newspapers that were complaining about it were in tobacco country. Most of these were North Carolina and South Carolina newspapers. I found that interesting as well. So I'm just sort of dabbling in this early research about baseball card collecting, but I think it's a very fruitful area, and I welcome any questions at all. One thing that Chris and Mark didn't mention, but I will mention, is that the Hall of Fame is working to create a baseball card exhibit. It'll be a permanent exhibit, and it should be opening next year. And so we're hard at work on that. Yes, Chris has a little handout there that's, I think, the Hall of Fame has sent out to a number of individuals called Shoebox Treasures, but you can go on the Hall of Fame's website and learn more about our interest in putting together the exhibit. And so happy to entertain any questions you might have. Thanks very much.
I have a question. We all know about Honus Wagner not wanting to be part of the baseball card situation, which obviously makes this card incredibly valuable. Were there any other star players of that era that took the same approach, didn't want to be associated with the cigarettes and the cards in your research?
I actually haven't been researching that, but my understanding is not so much. And quite frankly, there's a lot of mystery surrounding the whole Honus Wagner being anti-tobacco, since he had his own... he was getting money from other tobacco companies and was very happy to have his likeness on other tobacco products, including one of the earlier cards from the from the early 20th century for Riccius cigars. His picture's on that. So a little bit of a controversy about that, and additionally, you know, how much he would be getting paid for his likeness is part of it. But I'm not aware of that, although I do know in doing this research I did find an article talking about how back in 1909, there was a great craze for getting Ty Cobb cards, and now obviously Ty Cobb was a big deal at that time, but additionally they went out and they specifically stated that the Ty Cobb cards were rarer, and it was from a demand standpoint, from a supply standpoint, not just a demand standpoint, but there was a recognized rarity even in 1909. Soon thereafter, but you know, basically the candy card companies sort of came to a rise around this time, sort of coming up by the 20s. They had sort of usurped that. One thing I did find out was, you know, in England they're still making tobacco. They didn't have these tariff laws that were trying to even the playing field. So Will's cigarettes was a big one where they would have different picture cards and you know, cricket cards or whatever, tennis cards, and those never had that 12-year hiatus. But you know, there was a furor about kids, like I mentioned in the talk. And listen, in going through, like I said, scores of articles, at not one point did I see anything about adults collecting the cards. I've seen a picture. I actually have a blog about a picture of a young man, but he's an adult, with a wall full of baseball T206 and T205 cards behind him. It's an incredible thing. So clearly adults did do that, but that wasn't what was being talked about in the press. It was a concern over the kids, but it's less of a concern if it's gum and candy.
Tom, was there any evidence that putting the cards in cigarette packs helped cigarette sales?
I did not research that, but I can only assume it was very good for cigarette sales because they weren't idiots and they weren't going to keep doing it and such that it would hurt their sales. One way they could actually sort of tell how the sales were, so they don't have the big data that we have today about sales, but one way they could tell was through these coupons where if you return a certain number, you send them back to the company, they'll give you something. And one thing they would actually do, if you returned a certain, for some card sets, if you returned a certain number of cards from that set, they would send you an album with all of the cards in. But in having the cards returned, this was sort of they're dabbling and learning how many cards, how their sales are doing in this interesting indirect method. Additionally, one theory, although it's not proven, is that a lot of these cards were then repurposed. So they came back and they said, oh, this is cheap. We can just put them in the cigarette packages again. Although I know that was this floated out there. I don't know if there's any way to prove that happened.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Yeah. No, I haven't a clue. I mean, there certainly a mania for autographs well before the introduction of cigarette cards of any kind, let alone baseball cards. What I particularly find ironic about the signed card or signed anything business is that the original concept for getting an autograph was essentially proof that you met this individual. And we have now come full circle where now autographs are usually done very indirectly. You don't meet the person at all, and it's a form of currency, which is, I think, a very sad statement. So, anyway, well, thank you very much.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah.
One quick question.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Do you know if they did cards for athletes from any other sport, like college football or whatever was popular back then?
Yeah. Yeah, there's all sorts of cards, and that goes well back into the 19th century for other sports. And you have two main types of, well, I actually think it's fair to say three main types of these things. You have cards of individuals who are famous athletes, baseball players or tennis players or boxers or whatever. Right. And of course, beyond sports, but we're just talking sports right now. Right. Then they have generic individuals, so just a generic tennis player or a generic football player. So it's just promoting the sport more than who the individual is. And then a massive craze that started in the 1880s and continued into the 20th century. And that was of women dressed in dressed as baseball players or as other athletes. Generally, the women were either promoted as actually athletes, which was wholly false. I mean, there were women who were playing baseball at the time, but those are not the women that they were taking pictures of. So there's that. Or another big craze that was a major controversy was they had pictures of... So you've seen these ones of the women, the female baseball players from the 1880s? Yeah. So then they also had ones where it's female cigarette rollers. So the idea was, yes, these women are the ones that are wrapping your cigarettes, and but really they're trying to sell sex. The cards, scantily clad cigarette rollers, which I find hilarious that someone say, "Oh, that's the woman for me." And but what's really interesting is the newspapers railed against this, not because there was a concern about these semi-nude women on the cards, but that the public was being lied to because these women really weren't the cigarette rollers. They were just random women that they got off the streets to take pictures of. That was what was really offensive to the press at the time. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. That was fantastic.